I said it's a pleasure to have like our very special speaker here, our own Federico Piazza. He will tell us many interesting things about particle detector models, entropy, and localization.
Thank you very much. I'm happy that you're here. The main argument for my talk is localization, which I'm going to define shortly. Since this may look like a philosophical argument of main philosophical interest, let me start my talk with an invitation that tries to say what may be the possible implications that a new look on localization may have on our understanding of semi-classical gravity. So let me start with a provocative view on this subject. But how do we include gravity with the other fields? There is a very well established paradigm about this, and it's just this. So since I can derive the Einstein equations from an action principle, I just use the safer action principle, and I just write the theory that contains, all the interactions that we know. So this ideally is the Lagrangian of the standard model of particle physics and gravity together. So this is perfectly fine by nature. It is very well tested on classical macroscopic regimes, so like solar tests, etc. Now here from macroscopic, I mean classical theory and let's say where the typical scales that I'm looking at are much bigger than the quantum wavelength of the fields that I'm considering. Now, of course, I can go farther and just apply these at the semi-classical level, where I treat the metric as a perfect classical object, and I just quantize these fields on some metric, or this action also makes perfect sense as an effective theory. So this is a step farther than this. Quantum gravity has no mysteries as long as I treat it as a low energy effective quantum theory. So at the energy not much less than that. So this makes perfect sense, and this is the actual paradigm that I'm going to. That I would like to question, but it's not so well tested. So the fact that we can buy this theory and apply them in a semi-classical fashion and is very natural, but not so well tested. First, the only indirect test that I can think of is the generation of the fundamental of the fluctuations or the cosmological fluctuations during inflation. No other tests of this approach I know. And on the other hand, if I buy this theory, I have to face some puzzles, right? So at the level of effective theory, already I have the cosmological constant problem. Already at the level of the semi-classical gravity, I have the black hole information loss. So I quantize this field on a black hole background. I see open radiation. I don't know how to interpret it. Probably the black hole evaporates, but then I end up with an unitary theory, apparently. And a related, probably less severe problem is the fact that in quantum theory on Q space-time, I have some ambiguities in choosing the vacuum, right? So this may not be such a severe problem, but still it's some sort of incompleteness of this theory, of this theory. So, this paradigm makes sense; it's very natural. But as any paradigm without a very precise experimental indication, I think it should be possibly questioned. And the reason why my recent research may put this paradigm into question is that. In inside this paradigm, inside this theory as I wrote it, it doesn't look like, but now I will explain why, there is a, it's encoded a very specific type of localization. So again, something that I'm going to talk about in the next slide. My recent research seemed to point towards another type of localization. So now I have two streets. Either I treat the gravity on the same foot as any other interaction, I write down an action principle, great, makes sense, so although you have these problems to solve, or you really think, at least at the semi-classical level, that gravity is really the geometry of the physical space. I mean, and then you may be interested in understanding a bit better how I associate the quantum degrees of freedom to the regions of the physical space-time. And this is what I call localization. I will talk about a bunch of things here. So first, the localization in general, and in order to, and then in order to support these general concepts, I will talk about other more specific ones that I've done recently with my collaborator Fabio Costa and Sergio Tassoloni. So now let's start with the first thing. So what do you mean by localization? So let's keep in mind the idea of having of being in a semi-classical gravity frame. So I have a classical space time and a quantum field. Okay. So each region of space. So now I'm going to foliate this classical space time in time and space. So I'm choosing a Lorentz breaking description, although we know that the Lorentz inequality is there, so I want to be able to recover it afterwards. But I can do this description. So each region of space at a given time has a dual description in this framework. So from the point of view of general relativity of classical gravity, let's say, if I cut out the region of space at a given time, which may be this room now, this is a submanifold. It is just basically a subset of the set of the entire points at this given time. Okay, so this is the picture that general relativity gives of P. Submanifolds, subset. Now, the picture that quantum mechanics gives, or quantum field theory gives of this, is that P is a subsystem. So if I write down the Hilbert space of all the possible fields of the standard models, let's say, then I will be able to write a tensorfolder structure where P is actually a subsystem of this tensorfolder structure. So there are these two complementary descriptions that I do usually in classical gravity. In semi-classical gravity, the rationale that allows me to make this one-to-one correspondence, so associate this quantum subsystem to this subset, now we call it localization. So I choose localization means I give you a rule, a recipe to associate to this. Subset, a set of quantum degrees of freedom. Great. So there is a
question. There's something that I don't understand, because in the manifold is the manifold of the events, right?
Yeah.
Of events. Yes. So and well, this is what you learn on the first page. It's not so well specified what an event is, but an event is something that supposedly did occur, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the space-time in the set of all the events that they occurred
mm-hmm.
everywhere and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Hilbert space are it's more a space of potentiality, in the sense that it's not like every point in Hilbert space is an event that occurred, but a field, you know, or a quantum state can take one of those values. So can you tell us a couple of words about it, please?
So I want to go in the direction. So So far, it's more of a mathematical description, really. So it is still true, I think it is still true, that in general relativity, this room now is a submanifold.
Yeah.
And in quantum field theory, this room now is a subsystem.
No, I'm not questioning it. I'm asking you.
The spirit, the spirit wants to be the more operational as possible. So yeah, I would like to make this correspondence in such a way that this idea of event is right. Yeah, it's operational as possible. But this comes at a later stage. So this comes when you have to actually decide what type of localization you have to. To Sousa, I think. So the way I introduced this a few years ago, which is a reality, basically, it was sort of the hope that there will be regimes where this description breaks down. But if quantum mechanics is right, I will always be able to talk about subsystems, right? So in the UV or perhaps in the IR, space time just breaks down. I cannot describe it in terms of this picture, but still I'll be able to talk about subsystems. And the reason is that this description is much more general than this. So just to give you an example, so this the tensor product structure is much richer and subtle than the subset structure, which is still very general, you may say. But let's consider like a so. So if I want to make a partition of some number of spins, for instance, right? So I can imagine a lattice system. Okay, so I have a finite lattice, finite number of sides, and I want to make a partition of them. So classically, I always have a finite number of possible partitions, just because the total number of lattice sides is finite. Okay, so this is the point of view of the set theory. Quantum mechanically, I always have an infinite number of possibilities. For instance, the most trivial case is two spins, okay? So two spins, if I want to bipartite it, I just can take one spin on the one end and the other spin on the other end. There are no other ways to bipartite classically two spins. Well, quantum mechanically, the way I can try to write this Hilbert space as a tensor product of this type is infinite, and technically you can see it by assigning a basis to this inverse space, and then you see that any correspondence of this type. So I say okay, I want to call this basis vector 0, 0. So these are assigns a quantum bipartition of the system, and you can see that in this very easy example. The degrees of freedom that you have to do this is SU4, which are the unitaries acting on this inverse space. And then you have to factor out U2, which is the degrees of freedom that you have in choosing a basis inside here and inside here. Like, more practically, what you need in order to do this bipartition is find out two subalgebras of operators that commute. Why? Because of course, so if I give you the partition at the beginning, you have those operators that act on I and act as the identity on B, clearly commute with the ones that act as the identity on A and act on B, right? Now, the converse is so true. So whenever you find two commuting subalgebras, then you can induce a bipartition. Okay. Now, all this may seem a little bit useless because, of course, we know. So, in the classical view, which is the standard localization scheme, we know what are the local degrees of freedom. We know what is that bipartition of the Hilbert space that separates the regions of space. And the classical answer to this question is I think as the algebra that induced the bipartition is nothing else than the algebras of the field, of the local relativistic field phi and the conjugate momenta, that clearly obey these commutation rules whenever I consider them in points in P and points in R. Okay, so I take all the field phi and pi with values in P. I take all the field phi and pi with values. So P in its place here and R with rest. Okay? This clearly comes, and also clearly this induces a bipartition of the system. Now this may look very intrinsic to quantum field theory. So if you take some approach to quantum field theory, it looks that really you start from this and then you build quantum field theory. Now there are some more constructive approaches, like in the Weinberg's book, which I learned very much, and according to it, so Weinberg really introduces the formalism to explain the scattering experiments, and just introduces very late later on the local relativistic fields, just in order to write down dynamics that are Lorentz invariants at sight, at first sight. So Weinberg says, if I find objects that transform very simply under Lorentz transformations, then I know that if I write down some Hamiltonian that is constructed with products of these fields, then I know that this Hamiltonian is Lorentz invariant. There is no explicit mentioning to the fact that these are actually the degrees of freedom that I have to put in the region of interest.
Sorry, Phil. Would it be more correct to say that when I want to define a partition like that, maybe I should use observable fields instead of just phi and pi? Like, for example, use, stress energy tensor, like combination of fields which are actually observable, instead of using like this guy's here, which.
Yeah, no, you're perfectly right. And in fact, it's the approach that I would like to try. So, but the fact is that the axiomatic quantum field theory, phi and pi are postulated to be the observables, and products of them are postulated to be observable. The energy momentum tensor is local in the fields, which means that it's also observable because it's just a product of them. But your question comes to my main point, because I'm asking, are these really observable? Yeah. So I'm going to show that I don't think these are really observable. So we get to build in a different way. Yeah.
Would it work with fermions?
Yeah,
with
just
dynamic fields?
Yeah. I should build the scalars with them. I should build the scalars and then they will commute. Yeah.
So what do you do about the boundary between P and R?
That's a good question. I'm not considering the number in here. So,
these fields should have some kind of a follow property with boundary.
If you say this
boundary is not the boundary.
So, it's outside of your partition. The partition is HP.
The idea that I have in mind is really a regularized field theory, right? So I'm really having in mind that at some point I may put a regulator. I will write them in terms of some lattice theory, okay? And then the boundary is not a problem anymore, because I just have one lattice here, one lattice here. I can lead to, and this is fine. This is my double idea. But your question is right. Your question is. I want to be as operational as I can. Okay, so I don't want somebody to tell me what are the observables of the theory, what I should consider as the local degrees of freedom. I would like to find it out within the theory, and this is a little bit the approach that John described with the part of the vector model of the next section. But before using this. So I want to make my point clear. Okay, so I will borrow two characters from my blog, which are Samantha and Liz. Okay, so first of all, Alex and Bob are all stuck. These are the new ones. So this is a spin system. Okay, this is a spin system which is physically built on some table, of the table in a. Of an experimental physicist which is called Samantha. So Samantha is in the lab and is not this spin system on her table. Okay. This spin system has got an Hamiltonian, so it's got a first neighbors coupling. So typically these are the equivalent of the field and degrees of freedom, because whenever you write down a gradient terms regulated, you have like first neighbor starting order. Okay, so this is the dynamic that is going on physically on the table, and okay, and some has got this spin system. Some of course from outside the spin system has got full access to the spin system. Okay, so she can take one spin, take it out of the spin system and see what happens. Try to force one spin to have some specific value, and she can also this spin system can be in its vacuum state, and then Sam will be able to tell that this vacuum state is entangled, because for instance she can take out the system and see that the system is rearranging because it was actually entangled in its vacuum state. Now, if these dynamics, so for some other, these are the local degrees of freedom. Okay, so these are the localized degrees of freedom in a quite obvious way. Now, we can miss that this dynamics is rich enough in such a way that that it contains enough degrees of freedom. For instance, let's say that it is so rich that it's like a lattice version of the standard model of particle physics. So you have a sort of standard model of particle physics on your table, and Samantha has got it on her table. Now, it may make sense to think that so, like everything that we see, the physics that we are doing is actually done in this plot by the excitations, by the states inside the spin system. So now I can imagine that inside the spin system there will live another observer, made himself by the excitations of the spins. Now, the point is, this observer may not associate the same degrees of freedom to what he calls localized stuff. Or this observer, according to this observer, the fact that some of its fields are in the vacuum may not have any operative meaning, because it just doesn't have any way to see that. The fact that the vacuum is entangled may not have any operational meaning, because it may not have any way to violate well inequalities starting from the vacuum. So this is a little bit the vision that I'm having in mind. So you can keep your Hamiltonian of the standard models local in the way that it's I save this operator form of the standard model Lagrangian, let's say. So this is right. But whenever I try to do a space-time description, a more accurate space-time description of what's going on, this may not be the degrees of freedom that we call localized. So this may not be the degrees of freedom that we associate to this room now, because we are the correspondent of Vincent inside this space system, right?
So that's like saying that this observer inside the system sees the collective modes, but not
for instance, yeah. So everything is not, for instance, like a table for him will be some excitation, and he's got to do things with his excitation. He can be particle detectors, but I will try to build one, but this will not be localized in the sense that Samantha would call it localized. Okay, so now the point is, if Vincent sees that his space time is curved, which space time is actually curved? So, what does it mean? So, is it some other space that is curved, or is it Vincent's space that is curved? I just introduced these other operators as an alternative to the usual localization scheme. So, basically, you write down, for a Fisker field, it's pretty easy to do. So if you just write down the Hamiltonian for a massive free scalar field, and you can introduce this following operator. So now note that I didn't put the the covariant measure here. So the, if you put the covariant measure and you want to and you sum up the two, you have the field phi. If you don't put it, you have some non-local object that are these Newtonian operators. They also produce a bipartition of the system. So it's exactly as phi and pi, also A and A dagger produces a bipartition of the system. So I can say that, they give me another rationale to associate the submanifold that in general relativity describes a region of space with the quantum degrees of freedom that in quantum field theory describes the same region of space. So some differences. So very sketchy.
It's the fact that the mass is five.
Yeah.
These are equal time commutators or?
Yeah, these are equal time commutators. So I'm not done. So I just want to. So on each time slice, whatever you choose the time slice first. And on each time slice, all I want to do is find out the subsystem. And I know that whenever I have commutators on that system, whenever I have two commuting algebras on the Hilbert space, I find out a subsystem. Then, of course, at a slightly different time, they won't come because the Hamiltonian is not local in this fashion.
This is the point of view of Vincent.
So this is what I'm suggesting Vincent to put see. Yeah.
Is there can you give us an insight to why if you write the operators in this way, this is the internal point of view?
Okay. Especially again. But just to give you an intuition. So if this is a perfectly localized particle at a given time in point x at a given time t. So this is a perfectly localized according to the standard localization. And this is the way you should picture it is something that is created here and goes along any direction, and it feels completely the right cone because you want this object to be relativistic invariant. So you have a very weird particle that is created here, but in such a way, and in fact, I have to prepare the statement on all these surfaces here, in such a way that it feels completely that it's with equal probability. Now, the Newton-Wigner is you just create a pocket here, and it's not going to spread. Of course, it will have cues that will have cues, it will develop very, very soon cues at infinity, but these cues are exponentially suppressed. Okay? So, yeah, so this is the alternative localization.
This first one on the left, I'm confused. I thought there was no such thing as a completely localized particle relativistic quantum field theory.
Yeah,
in particular, this thing will have a non-zero overlap with the particle that you create space-like to it if you use this definition.
Precisely. So this is.
So I'm not sure that picture is. I mean, that picture could be misleading.
Yeah, this picture could be misleading. So this picture is just, let's say that this picture just wants to emphasize the fact that the T point function would be no outside the electron. So the propagator would be
it's
no.
Not, it's not, though, that's the point.
The propagator is no, right?
No, the commutator is no.
The commutator. this is not null because there was
not
a combination of these modules.
It's not zero because it's well, the space like distances is the same as the
So this is okay. No, you're right. So this is another problem, I would say, of the standard localization scheme. So the fact that localized, so otherwise stated, if I have an operator, I have my reason P, okay, and I have an operator defined here, okay, in A. So this is some, let's say, phi. The operator may be phi defined at point xa, okay, or some combination of it. Now I take the vacuum and I calculate this operator on the vacuum, okay? This will give me some number. Now I put a field, so I create a particle like I did here. I create a particle and I create it here, okay?
So you'll see the difference.
Right? You will see the difference. So there is no So there is no strict localization in the usual. So this type of localization doesn't allow strictly localized states. This does. So if I excite a particle here by, for instance, a dagger of x on the vacuum. So this is a state that says that there is a particle here. I calculate some operator which is localized in this sense outside this region. This gives me like it would give in the vacuum. So it's just saying that so if I put the particle here, this region is like in the vacuum. Okay, so and this. You will see it also in the.
But what is true in the relativistic theory is that if you apply a unitary operator made locally, then you won't see the difference outside the line.
No, I'm not talking about like cone. Now I'm talking about the same time.
We're talking about equal time.
Yeah, strictly equal times. Okay. The most striking difference is of course the following. So this is a form of an operator. So if I write down this operator, I started with the Hamiltonian that was a sum of modes. Okay, so I have dagger k and k. Okay, then I go to the field, and this same Hamiltonian I can write it as an integral of the whole space of some density. Okay, which will be phi dot squared plus grand phi squared. Now, this same object, I can write it in the Newtonian representation in this way. So, as a double integral, it's actually a double integral where x and y are extended over all space of these operators. Okay, and this is a kernel that dies out with the Compton wavelength of the field. So this means that whenever I want to restrict the Hamiltonian and say, okay, what's the Hamiltonian of the original space P, here I will have one single integral. So here I will have to restrict the x in P, in the region P, in the manifold P, while here I will have to restrict both x and y in the region of P. Okay, so this is a brutal non-locality of the theory. So because this is, so I go back to my starting point. This is something that you wouldn't see. So these two objects are the same if you are not sensible to the Compton wavelengths of your fields. Like I don't think that this makes any difference in solar system test, for instance. But still, this is a type of non-locality which is pretty used. So so this really means that.
What happens when?
Yeah, for Maestlin fields, so this k goes as 1 over x minus y to the fourth power. it's much more brutal.
There is a power also in the mass.
There is a power, of course. There's the same power, actually, but the exponential wins over long distances. It's much more brutal. And you have a user. So it really means that, so if you say, okay, these are my localized degrees of freedom, it really means that these two points are instantaneously related by an Hamiltonian. It's very small because it dies off very, very quickly, although in the master's case it's more subtle. But yeah, there is this. This also means that, like in a black hole picture, you will really have a communication between inside and outside, small, but you have it. And also, I heard recently on these alternative inflationary models where you attempt to create to solve the horizon problem by with non-locality. So where here you have a user non-locality. I think to go back in time very much in order to have your Hubble scale smaller than some quantum wave or some particles. And of course, yeah. No, it's brutal. I agree, it's brutal. I'm just wondering if it's wrong, if it has to be wrong. Like if we have tests that say this is wrong. Okay, so. Okay, so. What else? Okay, another difference. So you may say, okay, this is an integral, okay? So the entire h will be just the sum of the h calculated in p and the h calculated in all the rest. But this is not true because of the gradients, right? So you have gradients across the board. Whenever you regularize this theory, you have gradients across the board. So in fact, H is equal to HP plus H rest plus some gradients there that we on the board. So these gradients there are responsible for the entanglement of the vacuum in quantum field theory whenever you use this localization scheme. Now the vacuum is strictly a product state in this new localization scheme. So here you have that between these two regions of space, you just don't have gradients there. You have actually an interaction that is exponentially suppressed by quantum wavelengths, but it's such that the vacuum is just like a product state p times o rest. I'm running out of time completely.
So there's no interaction between them?
There is. But the vacuum is for the same reason that as we pictured here, for the same reason that whenever I have a particle localized in a place and I calculate some expectation value in another place, this other place is like being in the vacuum. It's like strictly being.
You have 5 minutes because we started like 5 minutes late. So.
Okay. So in order to support this, so particle detectors in field theory. Okay. So this was a work with Fabio process. We tried to model the detection of a particle within a quantum field theory within a quantum field theory model. So what is a particle detector model? It's a composite physical system where I associate some quantum degrees of freedom to a detector, and also I have the quantum degrees of freedom of the field. Now, I will write down some Hamiltonian for this physical system, so I will have a free Hamiltonian for the detector, a free Hamiltonian of the field, if I want to consider a free field, and then some interaction of Hamiltonian. So now, very basically, HD can be very small, so all I need is a two-state system for the detector, so the detector can be like the ground state and excited state. And I will have some internal Hamiltonian with some difference in energy between ground and excited. And then phi can be an otherwise free field. So it's coupled to the detector, but otherwise it's free. And as usual, it's free. So now, note that there is a very special state. So there will be a state in this model that I call that I associate to the state of affair. The detector is in its ground state, and the field is in its vacuum. Okay, and this is the state by construction. Now, why the detectors are important for this localization procedure? So, let's not to think in some prosimetric way, okay? So, I don't want to talk about regions of space. I just have an interaction, a quantum interaction, okay? Now, I can, so, since this system fills the entire space time, are we not able to decompose this in the degrees of freedom that stays in some place and the degrees of freedom that stays in the rest, okay? So now, the detectors are important for localization because according, so whenever you choose a specific type of detector, you're choosing an interaction of Hamiltonian for it, right? And this interaction of Hamiltonian puts in connection the degrees of freedom of the detector with the degrees of freedom of the field that you think belong to your regional space. Okay, because you want to say with this, you want to say the detector is there. So the detector is a localized object. The detector is a localized object by definition, because this table is a localized object. Okay? So since there is a very precise type of localization which is usually assumed, you can think, okay, so I know what are these degrees of freedom, these are the relativistic fields, so I know how to build this interaction Hamiltonian, and you will arrive to a type of detector that is of the Moore-Levitt type. We try to follow another way, so try to start from some physical properties within some quantum field theory, like really imagining that we are within the quantum field theory, and all our objects are built with quantum fields, and we arrive to a different type of detector, which I call the fog.
Why?
Not the fog. Hey, so because so I'm so we formulated the fog principle, which basically says that a frog doesn't see. So that will tell you. So this is the whole detector. So this is the interaction of Hamiltonian. This is some operator that acts inside the detector, and this is just the field. So since I want the detector to be a localized object, I just couple to the degrees of freedom. I just couple it to the degrees of freedom that I believe are localized, and this is what are in the first place. So now, the point is that since there are creation operators in sci-fi, that state that you would interpret as the detector is in its ground state and the field is in its vacuum is not an alien state of this Hamiltonian. So really, generically, you would expect that counts of fundamental nature. So the detector just clicks in the vacuum because this state is not an alien state. Now, the front. Okay. This is all very well connected to each other. So these are all these aspects are very nicely connected to each other because that type of detector that is based on that localization can also see the entanglement of the vacuum. So Resnick is not the only one proposing an experiment of this type. So you start with the two Moore-Levitt detectors, and you make them go at separate positions like that. You switch them on and off at space-time separated place. And since they have a finite probability of clicking in the vacuum because of these dark counts, they can be entangled with the vacuum and entangled between themselves. So in principle, you can really, if you think that this experiment is doable, you can experience violations of Bell inequalities from the vacuum. So just because you're in the vacuum, so just using the vacuum of some field, okay? Now, our main point is that we would expect this vector that we interpret as the vector is in its ground state and the field is in its vacuum. We generally would expect it to correspond to a stable bound state or some other theory, so with an eigenstate. So at a deeper level, if I really want to describe the detector and the field itself with a deeper local relativistic field theory, this should correspond to an eigenstate of this local relativistic theory. And a nice example is the hydrogen atom, right? So the hydrogen atom is a very nice photon detector. It gets excited if it gets a photon, and so in its ground state at least. So so the hydrogen atom is a perfect detector in our view, and it, in its ground state, so there will be a configuration of QED that describes the hydrogen atom in its ground state. Okay, and this will be an eigenstate because an hydrogen atom in its ground state cannot go anywhere. It's just in an eigenstate of the total of the complete QED theory. So we want, so for the same reason we want this vector, this state, to be an eigenstate of the model detector. Now, modeling an hydrogen atom is a bit difficult. We start with a theory which is much simpler than QED, and it's made by three fields. Okay, so this is a local relativistic field theory as we want it to be. We know that physical theories are like that. These are three fields. So one is the field that naively we want to detect. We are thinking of it like a light field on mass M. And we will call it C sector of the theory. Then we have another particle, much more massive, stable, we will see that it is stable. And then we call it sector A of the theory. And then we will have a slightly heavier particle that we will call a sector B of the theory. So if you can adjust this message in such a way that this is stable because it cannot go anywhere else, okay? This is stable because of the form of this Lagrange, because of some symmetries that you can introduce in the Lagrange, of this Lagrange, and which are preserved at higher order. This is not stable because it can decay into A. So B is not stable because it can decay in A and C. So the picture is pretty. So
what are you doing here? Phi is an ordinary in our world, what we know, and chi and eta are your Planck scale fundamental fields?
No. I'm not talking about Planck scale now.
So what is fundamental?
Fundamental for me, fundamental means more fundamental than a part of the vector problem.
So you have some underlying.
Yeah. So exactly as I presume that I can describe a quartz detector with QED. Now I want to go to the QED level. So this is okay. So ideally this is so the presence of so this particle alone in the universe is my detector in its ground state and vacuum of the fields. When there is this other particle around, this can be captured and form this metastable state, and this is by definition a detector that has kicked. So again, I have the free Hamiltonian for each of these fields with the masses that I've introduced, and I want to collapse I want to describe these two sectors of the theory as a vector mode. So again, A can capture C and form a metastable B, a metastable state B. Now, of course, so ideally in this more fundamental theory, this is the state that represents the detector A in its own state, because in this state there are no other particles. Of course, this is not an eigenstate of the full theory, but just because it's an eigenstate of the free theory. We know that to every stable particle in a theory will correspond an eigenstate. So in order to make it appear, we use the so you can see that this is not an eigenstate, because for instance, if you apply the interaction of Hamiltonian or the fundamental theory to him, this state can go into B and C. So, okay, so you can absorb a dagger with this, and then you can create a B dagger and C dagger. So, but it's not, we know that these are just virtual processes, right? It's not really what's happening. The same is true for the vacuum, okay? So, apparently, according to this theory, the vacuum is unstable, but the true vacuum of the theory, by definition, isn't a state of the full theory. And so, there is no reason to think that. Okay. So, in order to make this appearing, we dressed the fundamental field theory. So, dressing is some formalism that is used mostly in nuclear physics, but not only there, and amounts to doing a unitary transformation on all the entire universe space. So you want to take the vacuum of the free theory and map it into the vacuum of the full theory that you call dress vacuum, and each operator will be dressed. Will be dressed in a similar way. And I will ask, if I can, that this vector, and this vector are eigenstates of the full theory, because this is, I want to be the true vacuum of the theory, this is, I want to be the presence of an A particle, this I want to be the presence of a C particle. If I try to do the same with the presence of a B particle, I fall into contradiction for technical reasons, I would say, but it's very interesting. Everything is consistent. So, make a short story short, I write a Hamiltonian. So I transform the Hamiltonian, and I write it in terms of these dressed creators and annihilators. So this is not the full Hamiltonian. This is just an approximation of the full Hamiltonian at first order in U. The bad thing about the dressing approach is that you should build Hamiltonian at each order in perturbation theory. So you go to second order and you have to build a completely new Hamiltonian. So the real Hamiltonian is really what I wrote here, actually. If I find it first, I will never find it. Yeah, basically this, okay. So the local Hamiltonian is the one. But at each order in perturbation theory, I can write an effective Hamiltonian that is valid at that order. And all the processes that I want to consider are of first order in okay. So here, I mean, the stability of the A and C sectors manifest. Of course, Lorentz invariance and Lopetti are hidden, especially locality, are hidden because I rewrite the same Hamiltonian in terms of operators which are not local. So I cannot write this Hamiltonian in this form, because it's written in terms of the eigenstates of the full theory. Now we end up with we want now a model detector that has the same metric structure of the formal Hamiltonian that I showed you, and that reproduces faithfully the same probability rates, probabilities, so probably capturing probabilities. So this is your guy. These fields are built with the dress fields. So note that I can still write down. So I can still write down a field which is otherwise free, but it's not anymore the field, the phi that I introduced in the first place, because it's built with the dress operators. And so in a way, your local field theory has produced a non-local detector for the dress field, for this field phi that contains a little bit of the other original field. Okay, so it's interesting that we ended up with this model detector, and then we discovered that the very first detector model 13 years before Huru was proposed by Glauber, which is another price, so I'm not kidding here now, He proposed precisely the same the vector model. So he says explicitly that this attitude to consider the local relativistic fields as the fundamental object of your theory is valid only classically. Actually, quantum mechanically, what you really have in absorption experiment, you really deal with this field. And if you look at this, so let's say that he came from a more of phenomenological path to what we found theoretically, let's say. Now again, if you take an axiomatic quantum field theory, it's postulated from the very beginning that, on the other hand, these are the observables and these are your local objects. The frog is also related to von Dylan, because he's not there in the usual sense, so it's sort of. The frog doesn't click in the vacuum at all, so there is no way to create correlations from the vacuum by using this particle detector. So this is the other way of saying that the vacuum is a product state in this different organization. And we also know that when we force very naively this detector along an accelerated trajectory, we don't see the whole effect. But
Is the first point an experimental prediction?
Prediction means?
No, prediction.
Yes, that is.
So the rest of the guy is saying that you can do it.
Yeah.
And you're saying, no, you can't.
I'm saying the entanglement of the vacuum is a very nice mathematical factor. You cannot create, you cannot violate Bellian inequalities with that. If you do, my localization is wrong, and my detector model is not realistic. Thermal entropy. I'm almost over. So this is a relative issue, because whenever you want to, so if you pick a box and you apply quantum field theory to it and you put a boundary condition, then you can calculate the entropy, and it's got a perfectly well-defined behavior, and it scales as you want it to scale. So like for instance, for a massless field, it will go as the volume of this box times t to the third. If you start out of a box with very precise boundary condition, you just cut out a regional space arbitrarily, like you do in cosmology every day. No? So you just have a moving volume. There is not a box there. There is no boundary condition. You just cut out an imaginary volume there. So if you do it in quantum field theory, you always have vacuum contributions. So this is nothing else that the vacuum entanglement that I said before. So on top of pieces that you would expect from the fact that now you are considering a thermal state, and in fact these pieces will go to zero when the temperature goes to zero, you have the usual contribution of entanglement. Okay. And this is the cutoff. So you expect. So these are actually infinite contributions. And this makes a thermodynamic description. So it's interesting, because also in cosmology, as I know, you apply very often the conservation of entropy, but the entropy that you calculate is always calculated with classical statistics, basically. There are many empiric arguments to use the holographic principle and say the entropy in a regional space, etc., etc. But when you actually do the calculation, you find an infinite result. So again, if you cut out a regional space according to this other localization scheme, so the next thing is that this regional space is independently a factor, has got an independent factor structure in it. Okay, so you can accept independently a particle here and a particle here, and it doesn't mix to each other. So whenever you calculate trace, so if I want to trace away, for instance, the region R, I would just have to sum over first the vacuum in R plus all the one particle states in R plus all the two particle states in R, and so on. So this is just in order to reproduce the entropy. Then we introduced a diagrammatic formalism. So we wrote this two-point function with a line, and whenever you consider points that are inside the region P, this would be full circles, while points are outside the region P would be semi-circles. And so there is all a bunch of calculations that you have to do, but it all amounts, boils down to calculate this quantity. Because once you calculate this quantity, which is a diagrammatic expansion, you can use some traces of this operator here. I don't have time to go into all the things. So basically, once you calculate this quantity, you can apply this formula and calculate the answer. So this is. Now, the exact calculation is not possible, but you can consider different limits, so like for instance, big volumes and small volumes limits. It's interesting that for instance, in the big volumes limits, you want to have as many full circles as possible, and this will be the leading terms of your extension. But anyway, so the calculation doesn't contain at any step an area dependent term. It's completely finite. It's cutoff independent. You don't need a cutoff to the calculation, and it's got a perfect thermodynamic phase. So this is the big volume limit, and this is the small volume limit. It's still volume dependent, although not extensive in the typical sense. So okay, so I stop here.
We have time for a couple of questions and comments.
So this is consistent with the classical expectation, or?
Yeah. This is. We check that also even the numerical factors here are precisely what you have. For instance, if you quantize the field in a box, so.
But the other terms are quantum, right? The correction. Those are quantum origin, or?
I would expect them anyway. Perhaps you're right, because you see. So this is not, so this is just the big volume limit. So because before you have another behavior. So while if you quantize it in a box, strictly I think that you just have this result. Because quantizing in a box means that you don't consider any other volume that the volume that you are in a box. So it's already the.
Lower line is like some sort of Bose-Einstein, or
no, the lower line is in physical in terms of physical length, this is a really small volume, because like typical temperature would give you I don't know, the temperature of this room I think is much less than a millimeter, so yeah, you have to consider a really, really small volume to see this correctly.
But in the correction, this also in the corrections, would you also have terms depending to the area as well?
No.
Because there's also the use of figure on the area, on the surface, right? As corrections, maybe in the terminology.
There are no. I just cut out a surface completely randomly. It's just an imaginary surface. I want to consider an arbitrary region of space as a thermodynamic system here.
And there is a thing thinking of the two-dimensional boundary of this region. Thermodynamic.
The whole point of the localization is using it. Standard localization thing, you get this tendency to on the area while this localization framework you don't. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there are views of them on the boundary as they are inside. I don't see why they should weigh more than the ones inside. It would be different if I put boundary conditions on the surface. Then
I was curious. I think it's the same thing that people are thinking about. What do you see as the application of this to black holes? Presumably, they're more interested in the low temperature. And you're saying there's no entanglement tension. Or even if you set the black hole temperature, that's a very low temperature.
So what I'm saying is that
you're not getting an area low. So
what I'm saying is that
are you saying that? I mean, do you regard that as a promising result or an unfortunate result? Because
so I regard that as a promising result. Because if you want to, so if you want to, so let's associate an entropy to a black hole, but then you have to tell me what type of entropy is. My result will suggest that it's not an entanglement entropy, or the fields in their vacuum around the black hole. The entropy of the black hole, you may also associate it with all the possible ways that you are able to form the black hole. That is fine, you can do it. I'm just saying that
many people have thought of the entanglement entropy as a possible origin for the black hole. This would be saying, forget that.
Yeah.
That's not.
Yeah.
And so then I had a related question. To what extent does this definition of the entropy frame in there? Because the Newton-Digner basis depends on the frame.
Yeah, right. So,
where, say, in a black hole, you really get the entropy from the cross section of the horizon.
Because if you calculate the point is if you calculate around the different surface,
you're saying that if you sort of there's a fundamental breaking of Lorentz invariance. I mean, if you want to give this entropy to physical meaning,
whenever you introduce a temperature, you are breaking Lorentz.
Yeah, that's right. But any state breaks Lorentz invariance. But in normal field theory, we can compute the entropy of that state without choosing a frame. We'll get the same answer in any frame.
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Well,
I'm sure.
I mean, trace rho log rho is the same number.
So it's interesting to note first that this result has been possible to calculate. So another way would be, I calculate this result in usual 1-2-3 theory and I subtract the vacuum contribution again. Would find this. Problem is that you can do it explicitly on for my field theory and only in one dimension. There are no other applications that have been able to pick out this small contribution from the vacuum contribution. Now, as far as I know, these calculations are made in some frame. So the frame in which I define the temperature, because for instance, the usual equation is just considering like a Euclidean space. And in that Euclidean space, I want to calculate the entropy on a cylinder, no?
A Euclidean space, that's different. So that's necessarily an equilibrium calculation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in principle, one can define, I mean, there are technical issues associated with the boundary and the cutoff and so on, but in principle, one should be able to define an entropy either for the whole space-time, say there's no horizon, or for the exterior region, for an arbitrary state.
You can do it. You can do it.
And you should be, that should be independent of the hypersurface that you choose in to, in the whole space time, or independent of the hypersurfaces as long as they intersect the boundary and the horizon in the same cross section. In the case of the horizon, because the different hypersurfaces should be related by unitary transformation. That's in the standard way of calculating.
So the vacuum contribution would be dependent on the area, you're right. So as long as I choose different surfaces with the same physical area, I'm fine. I don't know about
you
about
get zero
there. I mean, choosing a different surface, it means that I'm choosing a different frame.
Yeah.
Which means that I'm going in another frame in which all the particles have an average velocity. So the average velocity of all the particles is not normal anymore because I'm choosing frame.
Maybe one last question on. Is the Newton-Dickens state defined for space time, like we would have for a black hole?
No, I think so. I think that whenever you have a Hamiltonian, so I can write the Hamiltonian on some foliation, and whenever I have this Hamiltonian, I think it will be fine. But it's a, I mean, it's an open question. I don't have any theory. I don't have a finite theory.
Okay, so let's send the speaker again.